Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
In the past 50 years, the U.S. workforce has grown by about 100%, but by 300% in the number of part-time, temp, and contract workers among people who'd rather be working full-time. Let me say it again. It's a lot of numbers for first thing in the morning. In the past 50 years, the U.S. workforce has grown by 100%, but by 300% in the number of part-time, temp, and contract workers who would rather be working full-time. Our move toward replacing more full-time benefited stable jobs with temp, part-time, and contract gigs is often called the gig economy. Is that trend a net good? Psychologically? Economically? As a society? This morning on Work with Marty Nemko, I'm going to debate that using what I call the switch sides in the middle debate to ensure that the arguments, rather than the debaters, determine which side is more meritorious. My debate partner, the usual one, she does such a perfect job at it, Regional School Superintendent of the Year, named one of the nation's top leaders in educational technology, and most important here in this context, always a voice of uncommon sense, Dr. Barbara Nemko. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko, as usual.
Good morning.
What are we hearing here? Are you on a cordless? Are you on a
No, I'm on a landline.
There's bad feedback. Hold on. Let's see if we can fix it. It just went away. Let's see if you're still there. Let's see. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties. Nope, I'm still hearing a lot of... Well, we'll just have to deal as is.
It may be the weather.
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, okay. So the way the switch sides in the middle debate works is for the first few minutes you hold forth on all the arguments for why having a gig economy is a bad idea.
You know what? The sound is getting worse.
The sound is getting worse. I see. It's sounding... should we call you back? Okay.
Yeah, why don't we try that?
I'm going to try calling you back. Okay. Just hang up. Okay, bye. Dear listeners, I'm sorry. This is the problem with live radio. It happens. So we'll do this right live on the air. I'm going to call right now. Stay with me. Okay, she's going to put us on. Let's find out. I'm going to put you on hold here so that there's... Are we good? Okay. Dear listeners, first of all, have you been patiently waiting? I thank you. Barbara, you sound perfect. Can you talk now?
Yeah.
Oh, you sound perfect. All is good. All right. Well, hopefully it'll be worth the debate. For those of you just joining us, we're doing a switch sides in the middle debate, my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko, and I, on the question of whether having a gig economy... where more and more jobs are part-time, temp, etc., is a net good thing for the world, for people, for society, or a bad thing. And Barbara has agreed to go first, so she's going to lay out a bunch of arguments and then why it's a bad idea. Then I'm going to make some arguments for why it's a good idea. And then to ensure that it's not that whoever, quote, wins the debate is not who's the better debater, but which arguments are stronger, we switch in the middle, and I take the other side, and she takes the other side, and then we'll invite you to call in and say who you thought won, which side won, whether indeed society is better off as more of a gig-centric economy, more gigs than full-time benefited jobs, or vice versa. Got it? Okay. Barbara Nemko, start in making some arguments as to why you think having a society in which there are more of the jobs are part-time, temp, contract is a good thing, is a bad thing.
Bad thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Bad thing. Unless you are an absolutely incredible superstar with skills that everybody needs, you're going to make less money and you're not going to get benefits. When you're moving from job to job, you have to sell yourself each time, and then what you're getting is a short period of time where you have a job and you fix some problem and then you're off again. And so there are periods of time in between the different gigs where you're earning nothing. And so that obviously net, you end up with less money and fewer benefits. For me, one of the most important things is many of us love going to work because we work with the same people, and over the years you build very deep and long-lasting relationships with your coworkers. So going to work is a very pleasant place to go. You know that you are going to have lunch with people that you know and like. You have shared history and shared experiences. And so that's a very social and emotional comfort part of work. Also, you don't want to constantly have to look for a job and then learn everything about it, because it isn't only the technical parts of the job, which are maybe difficult enough, but now you have to learn the culture of the company each time you start something new, and who's in and who's out, and what's up and what's down. That's tough. And people have groups at work. The friendships have formed over many years, and you're always the outsider and the newcomer. So again, socially, emotionally, psychologically, that's a huge negative for doing that. I think for anybody who is in the gig economy, the phrase lifelong learning is more than just a phrase, because you need to have great skills. You're not going to get hired if you don't. There are plenty of people out there who have better skills than you do. If you're working in a regular, what used to be a regular job, where you get hired and you're there for years, the company will train you each time new things come along so that you can keep up over a long period of time, because the company has invested in you. They want you to be good. But if you're in a gig economy, that you don't have anybody who's going to train you all the time. It's on you to figure out what you need to be trained in. I'm afraid that the gap between rich and poor, which is enormous, is going to get worse as the people who have the good full-time benefited jobs, there will be fewer and fewer of them, but they are going to continue to do well. And the people with the gig jobs are going to do less and less. The more people are in the gig economy, the more people there are to choose from, and that exacerbates the problem. So pretty much I'm feeling like the gig economy is putting us in a race to the bottom.
Okay. I'm sorry, please, you had to sound like you were done, but you had one more thing now to say. What did you want to say?
Well, yeah, you look at this country, and we are the richest country on earth. So shouldn't we think about what we're doing to our people? And think about it. If you don't have a good job and you're always looking, and you may have to go to 10 interviews to get a gig job, that's pretty sad. You don't feel so good about yourself. It's very hard on the self-esteem. And when your self-esteem is low and you feel like you have nothing really going for you, people get nasty. It's very hard on relationships with the family. Some people get violent. And of course, if you don't have money, you're not out there in the economy buying. So if you don't buy, then companies don't make things, and then they can't hire more workers, so they're letting people go. And it's got this ripple effect that I think is very difficult, and I think the fabric of our society is in danger.
I know it's inappropriate for a debating opponent to compliment the other person, but that I thought you did a fabulous job. I thought that was as good a set of arguments for why the gig economy is bad than I could possibly imagine. So great, Barbara. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. We're doing a Switch Sides in the Middle debate on the question of whether America's move toward being more gig economy, that is more people working part-time temp, is a good thing. Barbara has just eloquently and very comprehensively in about 5 minutes laid out a ton of great arguments for why that's a bad idea. And now I have the challenge of trying to come up with all the arguments I can for why it's a good idea. And then we're going to switch and or do something. We're going to do something to kind of take the other, each. Yeah, we'll switch, take the other sides. So, okay.
I think you're up for the challenge.
We'll find out. First of all, I just want to respond to something you would say, which is that, you know, it's difficult for the worker who doesn't have a full-time benefited job to keep learning because when they're working full-time benefited, the employer provides some training. First of all, they don't provide that much training. Second of all, you know, isn't it good pressure for people to feel they should be ongoing lifelong learners instead of being complacent? And if it's on them and they know, you know, they're being hired or not is going to depend on whether they are staying current and improving their leadership skills or communication skills. Isn't that a good thing? But apart from that, I want to make a bunch of arguments for why it is a good idea for America to become more gig economy centric. First of all, some people love the freshness of going from gig to gig. They get to work for 2 months, and then if they want to go to Kathmandu to find the guru, they can do that in between without loss. They can do that as they want. They get freedom. Also, let's say they're with an employer and they know that the job's only 2 or 3 months. If they don't like that employer, they got to stick with it 2 or 3 months, and then they're out and they can find a better one. You know how many people have the golden handcuffs and they feel they've got to stay in their current full-time benefited job because it's got the benefits, they really don't want to look for jobs. So it really does, it eliminates the bad fits between an employee and employer because it only lasts for a short time and they can look. Also, perhaps most important, Barbara, put yourself in the employer's shoes. Listeners, put yourself in the employer's shoes. Employers are people, too. If you owned a business, would you survive, especially in global, if you had to do global competition, I'm talking about not a local candy store, but if you had to employ every one of your workers or most of your workers 52 weeks a year, whether you needed that person or skill set or not, remember that in addition to paying a salary when that person's not needed, you have to pay not just in taxes, but all the government-ordered payments from, they've raised Social Security limits the employer has to pay. They've raised the workers' compensation amounts that employers have to pay. They've raised the Medi-Cal payments. Obamacare is all on the backs of the employer. They've got to provide and paid family leave, right? So if you're hiring somebody full-time benefits, those are the ones that are covered under all those, you know, government mandates. You're going to probably go out of business, certainly, or certainly lose terribly to your competitors and have to lay off people. And you also, you know, if you hire somebody full time benefited, you're going to more likely have to defend against a wrongful termination suit. The government has given permanent employees a hell of a lot of bases on which to claim wrongful termination. It's a hostile environment. There's discrimination based on race. There's discrimination based on gender, sexual orientation, age, whistleblowing, disability. Even if it weren't true, people feel like they have nothing to lose by going into the deep pockets of the corporation or the nonprofit or the government. Employees sue them all. So, even if you didn't have to compete with China or India, you'd be much more likely to go out of business because your labor costs were so high that few people could afford your product. And that's actually unfair to the consumer because now the consumer's got to pay more. And it's usually the poor who've got to pay, you know, for whom that increased price is painful. And if you're a nonprofit, you'd have less money to help the needy. So the gig economy, while it is hurtful to employees, to the people, to many people, not all, but to those who'd rather have a full-time benefited job and not have to do their own training, it in the end could result in a hell of a lot more lost jobs. Now, also, from an ethical standpoint, is it really an employer's job to pay more than fair market value? If that employee is not such a great employee and really is not that great and worth having 52 weeks a year full-time and benefited, but really is only good enough to be worth, you know, doing a fill-in project, is the employer's job to play charity? I mean, if an employer wants to give charity, that's fine. But is it wrong for the government, which already, as I said, hits both for and nonprofit employers so heavily, all those things I mentioned, is it fair to impose yet more forced charity to say that the government should restrict part-time and temp workers? Right. And you mentioned, Barbara, you mentioned the gap between rich and poor. You know, there are a number of the media, I'll just say it really is the advocacy groups, and then the media just kind of uncritically trumpets it. They make it sound like that income gap between the haves and have-nots is huge. Like they always talk about the Fortune 500 CEO pay is 1,000 times greater than the average worker. But not only do the CEOs represent a trivial share of the population, a lot of that has been because the stock market has run up in recently. And the good, I mean, if the market happens to go down, nobody can predict the market. But if that market goes down, those CEO stock options are worth zero. And besides, I read a report in Bloomberg that says you cannot generalize from the top 0.1% to the far more significant top 10 or 20%, which is doing far less well. What else do I want to say before I stop? No, I think that's enough for now. Oh, yeah, one more thing. When an employer chooses to pay somebody full, it's an expansion of a point I made earlier, but if an employer chooses to pay somebody full-time benefits, etc., it means that that employer believes that is a more meritorious employee. They don't want that. They don't want to lose that person. In general, while sometimes people get hired for reasons other than merit, on average, the people that an employer hires full-time benefits is either smarter, has better ideas, is more reliable, has difficult to acquire in-demand technical skills, is cooler under pressure, is a lower maintenance person, brings out the best in coworkers. Would the world really be better if less productive people were the same as more productive ones, which is what happens if the government tries to restrict the number of part-time temp people? So those are my best shots at why it's good to have a good gig economy. So now, let's let our listeners know. You're listening to Work with Martin Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We're doing a switch sides in the middle debate on the question of whether the nation's move to a gig economy is a good thing and whether the government should restrict it and say, no, employers, you cannot hire as many. You can only hire so many part-time and temp people. Is that a good idea? Barbara started by making the arguments for why it was a bad idea. I just made the best arguments I could for why it's a good idea. Now, to ensure that you, my
Wait,
dear...
Before we do that, yeah. Could I just rebut 2 points you made?
No, you can. Sure, why not? What the heck?
Okay. You were talking about the fact that it's good for people to be lifelong learners, and the companies that have full-time people don't really provide so much training. So let me give you an example, because I see this all the time in my own office. Every school district in the state of California has to report to the state and on the finances, and everybody uses a different system, and every agency gets to choose the system they use. Well, these are very complex systems. So as I look around, our office has chosen one. It's called Digital Schools, but other districts and county offices have chosen different ones. So our folks have been trained on Digital Schools now for more than 2 years, and they're still getting training because it's such a complex system. So somebody in a gig economy who wanted to get hired in my office, the likelihood of them knowing how to use our system is very small. So they could be coming from somewhere else. It's very hard to get hired if you have no idea and you're going to have to start from scratch when people have spent 2 years and are still learning. You don't know in a gig economy exactly what it is that you're going to have to learn. And the more complicated it all gets, the harder it's going to be. The other thing is, you said when you have a regular job, you have golden handcuffs, and that's true. You say, well, I've been in the system for so long, and I've built up this equity and my pension, etc. But to me, that's a golden parachute, because if you lose your job, you have a safety net. In a gig economy, there is no safety net.
Yep. Okay, I can counter those, but
now
I think
I'm ready to go pro.
Yeah, I think it's right. I think it's I could counter those, but I think it's not as good a use of our listeners' time to recounter those. So now, Barbara Nemco, make the best arguments you can for why having a gig economy is a net good thing.
Well, clearly, we hire people, and that hiring includes lots of costs for lots of things that the employer doesn't get any direct benefit for. And there are so many jobs that need to be done for some period of time during the year, but then the rest of the time, it's a lot slower, and probably we could do without full-time people, but once you hire a person, that person is yours after a probationary period. And you have to explain why you're getting rid of people, and you can get in trouble with the government over just firing people because you want to just save a lot of money. So you have to pay their salary, and then, of course, all the other benefits that we pay, health benefits, are wildly expensive and continue to go up. So that's a big cost to the employer. And that makes, if you're in a for-profit agency, that makes the price of your goods and services higher for people, and many low-income people get priced out of being able to use those goods and services. They just can't afford it because the employer has to keep raising the price that they charge. Because the government in a regular economy, the government restricts us from hiring a lot of part-time temp people. So if we don't do that, there's less money for the nonprofits, and companies shrink and go out of business, and they lose out to other countries. There's a reason that all of these companies are going offshore. They can hire people for so much less money. They don't have to pay all these benefits. And so companies here are closing, and people are losing jobs. If we had a gig economy and the companies could hire people part-time, temporary, for a certain period of time, more people would get hired. They wouldn't just be tossed out on the street because the company just shipped the whole kit and caboodle to some other country. And we have seen so much of that in the last couple of years. A gig economy would eliminate that, and I think a lot of jobs would come back if employers didn't feel so hogtied by having to pay all these salaries, benefits, and all the other things that you mentioned, Social Security, paid family leave, workers' comp, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, they keep raising the prices of retirement because the government, certainly in the state of California, we are so unprepared for this that our rates are shooting up. Even though we're not getting any more money, our costs are soaring, which is a real problem. It's hard for me to find a lot of things to say about the pro-gig economy.
You don't have to. There's no need to full-time if you feel you've done. Go ahead.
Is, for many people, it's fun. A lot of people like the freedom of meeting. You meet lots of new people because you go from here to there, and it's not the same old thing all the time. Many people in a full-time benefited job get bored. My God, I've been doing the same thing for the last 15 years and the same people every day. In a gig economy, you get to meet all sorts of people, and you get to work in different locations, which is really fun. Get to see different offices and different cultures and all the fun of something new. A lot of people really enjoy something new. Plus, you don't have to limit your vacation to 2 weeks a year. You can take a break. Now you get to, maybe you want to go for a month to Europe, or you want to go for a month to the beach, or rent a house in Paris or something, and rent your own house out so you can afford to do that. You can do that, which you can't do if you have a regular job. You can't just say, well, I think I'm going to be gone for a month, and I'll see you when I get back.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. She's just made the best argument she could for why the gig economy is a good thing, and I will close this switch sides in the middle debate by making the best arguments I can for why a gig economy is bad. In the end, there really is a big gap between rich and poor. And the reality is that when you convert full-time benefited jobs to part-time temp jobs, it exacerbates it. Because the people who are more likely to move from a full-time benefited job to a part-time temp is somebody who's not making a lot of money. Do we really want a society where there already is a big gap between rich and poor? I do think the CEO argument is silly because they do represent 0.1%. But the reality is there are a lot of people making $30,000 a year and with little or no or who had some benefits, and now they're going to work for $30,000 a year with no benefits when there are a lot of people making $200,000. And yes, let's agree to $200,000 more meritorious. They are contributing more. They're smarter. They're more together, whatever. But there is something that sounds cosmically and fundamentally unfair about having people who who can have two houses and being wealthy, no matter how much, because they win in the genetic and environmental, they won in the genetic and environmental lottery, and some schmuck who had the bad luck of being born to the wrong parents is making $30,000 a year. And so part of the reason for government is to correct that random random fact and give the person and create a measure of equality, especially since much of people's failings are beyond their control. Also, with regard to this notion of competing with the rest of the world, you're right. There's no question that companies will be in a better position to compete if they can hire more part-time temps or whatever. But do we really want the United States of America to be in a race to the bottom? Because there's always going to be somebody in East Asia or Africa or whatever who's going to work for a dollar a day with no benefits. And is that really the race we want to do? Are we willing to accept that there are going to be more people, more businesses going out of business, and we will have to learn to live in a less materialistic society overall? But it's wiser ultimately to not play that horrible game of race to the bottom and provide at least the best we can with people having a decent standard of living. And a gig economy is antithetical to that. Also, remember, when you are and you're dealing with vulnerable people, the people who are going to be who are working part-time and temp, who otherwise would have worked full-time with benefits, are people who on average are more vulnerable. Psychologically, they're living on the edge, they're frail, they're worried, they're not as efficacious as the group of people making $200,000. And you take those people, and now you take away their benefits. And now they're spending a lot of time for a few months every year, because they're not so great, looking for another job, and they don't find it easy to find a job. They don't do well in interviews. They send out 50 applications. They don't get anywhere. And now they finally get a job. These are sadder people, getting a temp job. These are sadder people. They may get, indeed, just forget about the violence thing you mentioned. Forget about whether they can afford to buy stuff. They are sadder, significantly sadder. And do we really want to encourage a policy with a free market gig economy where there are a hell of a lot more people who are already vulnerable to begin with and did lose in the genetic and environmental lottery to be sadder? And we have sad people is that, we tend to extol Tibet because they live that they have this happiness index. Does not a gig economy ensure that our happiness, average gross happiness index, gross happiness product, I guess, like instead of gross domestic product, gross happiness product is worse? So therefore, I conclude my argument and say, net-net, we shouldn't be doing that race to the bottom, and we should indeed restrict the number of part-time temp people. Those are my best shots. That's my best shot at making the anti-arguments. Dear listeners, now, you have heard both Barbara Nemco and Martin Nemco make the best arguments we could for a gig economy and against, and now we'd like you to call in and say which side, not which person, because we both took both sides, which side do you think is more convincing? Now, I understand that here in the Bay Area there is going to be an orthodoxy, there's a natural, visceral tendency to agree with the anti-gig economy because it's more, you want to be more redistributionist, more from the haves to the have-nots, and that may be the right argument, but I'm going to ask you to put aside your previous biases. And think of yourself like a statesman or a stateswoman. Think of yourself as like the wisest judge, looking fairly with a clear eye, what the Buddhists would call a beginner's mind, where you're not a victim of previous brainwashings, if you will, by the media or even the colleges, but you're looking as fair-mindedly as you can. Which side of the argument is wiser? And that's the word I like to use, wiser. Better to restrict the number for government to have a law that says we're going to restrict the employer's ability to have higher temps and part-timers, or would it be wiser to not? The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting, Barbara, for the calls to come in, do you want to put on your wise woman's hat? Wow, the lines are coming. Oh boy, they're just filling up right away. So maybe we'll keep that punchline from the end. But at the end of this thing, I'm going to ask you to make your wise woman's decision as to what you think you would do if you were President Clinton, who will be president, notwithstanding her, let's say, dishonesty. She will be president, and because the public will believe that she is going to make a better president, I'm going to ask you to play President Clinton. And what would be your policy regarding a gig economy? Oh, my God, all the lines are lighted up in a
well,
second.
Well, let's hear what people have
yeah.
to say.
Yeah, okay, and I'll do the same thing. Okay, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. Which side do you think is wiser?
Hello?
Hello. Which side do you think is wiser?
You know, the whole thing that you're doing here, I think, is a colossal mistake. I just couldn't keep track of who was for it and who was against it because you kept switching back and forth. And then I started not to trust you because you had just said the opposite. So I don't think it's quite a good idea what you're doing, but I would tell you how to make it better. If we had a gig economy that you could just go to your laptop or your cell phone and say, oh, I need a moderator for today's episode, somebody who can keep a stopwatch and say, okay, now it's Marty taking the pro side or it's Barbara taking the con side. You've got 45 seconds. And because there are people out there who have moderator skills, and they just need to be able to register it someplace. They need to Uberize it. And you're making a mistake. You're confusing temp work with gig work or task work, which is probably a better word to use. Anyway, I think you guys give terrible advice, but you're very entertaining. So I always listen. The bad advice was when Barbara tells us from her position as a public school administrator that it's very good to have these jobs where you work with the same people and you get to go to have lunch with each other and you socialize and you do that sort of thing. I mean, that's all very nice and happy, go lucky, you know, goosey, but it's not what we're there to do to administer the schools. That's a public sector kind of solution. Anyway, thank you very much for your program and listen to you all the time.
Thanks for the call. I'm going to restrict. I guess I have to briefly say we have done these switch sides in the middle debate all the time, and of course, you know, it requires you to listen to both sides. But I am very concerned about the media's attempt to slam a position, to slam down a position down our throats. And so what they do, and I watch CNN all the time, and frankly, and I listen to the public radio a lot, I am very dispirited by the fact that they either will have just one side. And it will be a one-sided argument, or they'll have a debate where they set up a straw man. They get a person who is a very strong advocate for one side and very weak advocates for the other side. So it ends up not being which arguments are the wiser, but which arguments, which side the media wants it to win. And this way we're trying to ensure that you hear best arguments from both sides. And whether, yes, Barbara Nemko does represent the public sector, and one specific job, she labeled it as such, she was not generalizing that everything applies to the public sector, but indeed it is unarguable that full-time, that people do, even if they're working hard, they do have a lunch hour, and they do have breaks. And if they're working full-time and over a long period of time, they get to know each other and grow old with each other, and that is an unarguable plus. I'm sorry, I spoke for you, Barbara. Do you want to add anything before we go to the phones?
Yeah, people who work in the public sector and do a job for the public are still people, and people like to be with people.
In the private sector, too.
Of course in the private sector, but he was criticizing that I said that in the public sector. We don't hire people to come in and socialize,
right.
But we are happy when people enjoy their colleagues, and frankly, they work harder because all these jobs require a lot of collaboration these days, and it's much easier to collaborate with someone that you feel very comfortable with because you did have lunch with them.
And if you, right. I'm sorry.
That's all.
And if you do have a workforce that is stable, their literature is clear that really does. There is an organizational culture and a history that gets transmitted and takes years to fully understand how to work well in it. And if everybody's a temp and part-time or whatever, nobody's got that organizational culture.
And frankly, we are told in all workshops that we go to about how to have a more productive workforce to work very hard on the culture. That culture can wreck what's going on in terms of productivity if the culture is not good.
Let's go back to the phones.
Enough of that.
Right.
I don't want to have to...
But these are relevant arguments. These are all relevant arguments of the workplace. This is not scripted radio. The goal is to take ideas that come up that are relevant, and when they come up, to address them. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind? Which side won the debate? Which arguments?
Right, not which person, which side.
Right.
Hello, can you hear me?
Beautifully.
Okay, yeah. Well, I'm somebody who's done both sides of it. Like, I've worked for companies, and currently I'm an independent contractor. I run my own gardening business, but I also work for Lyft, you know, the taxi company.
Uber, yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of the big problems that I've seen is that, you know, it's basically this culture of scabs, it feels like, where you can't really say much or have much leverage, because if you try to push back, or let's say like a writer gets in and complains and then they fire me, there's just a million people who would take that job. So you have no power as a worker to make the job better or to have better rights or to like defend yourself, because there's no worker, you know, rights there for you. So that's the really hard part of it, where it's like you just have to like take what you get from, you know, any writer and any person that works at a company that tells you what to do.
Isn't it worse in a full, if I'm a full-time benefited job, I've got a lot at stake. If I, you know, I've got this great full-time benefited job, and if I tell my boss I don't like this, I want to change things, aren't I at greater risk of losing a bigger thing than, you know, if Lyft fires me, I can go to Uber tomorrow. Isn't the pressure greater in a full-time benefited position?
I mean, I guess you could, but it's like there's only Lyft and Uber, so let's say something happens there, like there's no, like if I had coworkers that I saw every day, I might be able to talk to some of them and be like, hey, is this workload hard for you, or does this make sense, is this fair, you know, kind of like, let's talk about it, let's talk to our boss about it. But with this job, it's just like you just take what you get or you leave, and there's no input from the independent contractors that work for them, these companies.
Thank you very much for the call. We've got all our lines lighted up. I want to get a lot of perspective. Barbara, do you want to add anything, or should we go back to the phones?
Let's go to the phones.
Okay. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. Which side of the debate you think won? Should we be restricting the amount of gigs and jobs that are gigs rather than full-time benefited jobs?
Number one, both argument sides are totally right, and all your economics guys are spot on. I'm going to leave myself out of it. I've had $100,000 in an ATM, and I've had nothing. But the point kind of runs down to a humanitarian idea from listening to you. Are you sad or are you not, right? So if you think about this, what the problem is, and it's not a problem, they're all solutions. But what you have here is that we're not looking close enough at the humanitarian side. Again, both sides of the argument, I'm a great debater, but both sides are right. I was in the happy gene pool. So when you look at that, if we're trying to split the argument, the thing is that not two arguments, it's one. It's just one issue, which is the guy that makes $200,000 and is doing well, and the guy that makes nothing and is going job to job, they both want to be not sad. They don't want to be sad. They have lives. They have loves. They don't really care about anything but their families and themselves ultimately. So the guy who makes $200,000, when he's doing his thing, what kind of infrastructure does he want beneath his empire? Who does he want working for him? Who does he want possibly causing problems, possibly causing ruin? Anything that's going to happen. Do you want happy people or sad people? No matter how much they make, they could be Tibetans, whatever. What do they want ultimately to be dealing with around them, no matter where they are on the economic scale? That way, everyone's sad, and this conversation goes down to, what do you want to be? The guy with $200,000 or the guy with nothing? Those kind of people all over the place. You see where I'm going here?
Nope. I think you're only looking at half the equation. Happiness is not the only currency of the realm. It is not.
No, it's not. I agree with you. It is not. No, currency is actually the trumping factor over happiness.
Okay, hold on. Okay, I'm going to thank you for the call. I'll discuss this off the air. With you off the air. There is also the value. I have known a number of workplaces in which the workers are not happy. They're overworked, for example, and yet they produce amazing products in part because they are asked to push to their absolute maximum extent. They work 110%. And so maybe their family life suffers, maybe they're stressed. But what they do is I guarantee you, the people who worked on the iPhone were not always happy. They were very often unhappy. And yet the result of, you know, of all of that overwork, stress, and unhappiness is the iPhone or Google or a medical device that could save a lot of lives, and it was a rush to get that to save those lives. Or a nonprofit. They may, as I like to say, whether it be Mother Teresa, who now has got a right-wing reputation, so I'm not going to use St. Teresa as the example, but how many people work in unhappiness in Africa, sub-Saharan Africa, getting malaria, getting in horrible situations, and yet they're willing to be unhappy because it improves other people's lives. So my point is that happiness is not the only criterion, and if in fact, an employer, if I am an employer, and let's say I am, because I know something about the world of medicine, if I am working on a new drug, and I realize that there's so many different skill sets required to create that drug, and I realize that I am with my limited budget, everybody's got a limited budget, that I will have a better chance of getting a better drug to market more quickly at within my budget if I use a lot of part-times and temps. I get this consultant to help me with the statistics, this one to help me with the chemical assays, this one helped me to engineer and build something to do some kind of tests. My workers may be unhappy because they're temps and part-timers, but hopefully thousands of people with illness are going to be cured faster or prevented from being sick because of that. Happiness is only part of the equation. Barbara Nemco, what do you think?
Well, I think happiness is very important. Countries get into trouble when all their people are unhappy. And people who don't have money and don't have good jobs are unhappy.
Okay.
I don't think we discount it.
Okay. I don't think we discount it, but I'm saying happiness is... I was trying to be careful in my words. Happiness is part of the equation that should justify our decisions about everything. But part of it is also productivity to humankind in general. And, of course, you can define happiness not just in terms of happiness for the employees, but happiness for patients, customers. I mean, when we're on a telephone right now, as silly as it sounds. But Alexander Graham Bell and all the rest of the people who went from either inventing the telephone, figuring out how to make it affordable, how to make it available, the cell phone, make it available to everybody from Azerbaijan to Zambia, you know, the productivity, the happiness that comes is not just the workers, but the consumers, the customers. What needs to be assessed is the net happiness to humankind as we make all these decisions. Barbara, let's go to the phones, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco, Barbara Nemco. Which side of that debate do you think won? Should we restrict the number of gigs in the economy, or allow the free market to do it unfettered? Hi, it's you.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Love your show, Marty. Always listen to it. So, I definitely think that the gig economy as it stands is bad. I'm all for full-time employment. How and what Barbara said about, you know, employees needing to understand very complex work environments. However, I think that with automation, gig economy jobs are going to increase. And I'm wondering if I don't think it could happen in this political environment, but if we could reduce the amount of insecurity, one, single payer health care, so you have that off your mind to worry about, and two, guaranteed minimum wage or minimum salary.
I think you're right, and I think both the left and right agree that that's not a bad thing. I think we are moving to a guaranteed annual income, and my sense is, first of all, that it's a pragmatic issue. The government and the media want single payer. I mean, Hillary and the others have all agreed, you know, that really this was just they're trying to eat the salami a bite at a time. I think we're headed there, and it is an open question as to whether it's a net good. We do see that, you know, we've got such high demand, and if you're going to make it all public, it's unclear. But the insurance company is also a pain in the butt. They horribly take a lot of money out of the economy. They deny people. They add paperwork. So I think it's right that we're moving to single health payer care, health, that we are going to. It is true that we're going to be moving there, and that will have certain benefits and certain liabilities. Will, in fact, that create a net better society? It's difficult to say. I'm inclined to say yes, but I'm not sure. Barbara Nemco, what do you think?
I think that's actually a wonderful idea. We need to do something to make sure that people do not spend their entire lives being completely insecure and in and out of homelessness. And people do need to have guaranteed health care.
I think so.
I think that there's a reason that most people do agree with that.
You know, instead of the broad brush, because I teach in the medical school at UCSF, and I've always had a long interest in medicine and stuff like that, I am convinced that despite the enormous, ridiculous amount of time it takes to train to be a doctor and the prestige, there's so much they don't know. There's so many errors. And there's something cosmically wrong about charging so much, to whether it be doctors or hospitals or whatever. And some of it's Robin Hood to you know, so that we pay so that the poor get it for free. But there is I think that the medical establishment is making too much money. And some of it's the insurance companies and some of it is the doctors or whatever. To me, it's a calling. I think a doctor of anything, like in the old, and I'm not a hard leftist, I'm not, but in the Soviet Union, the old Soviet Union, doctors were among the lowest paid of the workers because it was a privilege, it was an honor to be a healer. And I think there's something wrong when we make the doctors are going to get paid a lot mainly because of the prestige and because they had to go to school for so long. Really, I believe that medical training could be made much shorter and better by making it more practical. So I think that single-payer health care is part of the health care solution if we associate it with decreasing doctor pay and hospital reimbursements, get the insurance companies out of there, and make medicine the calling that it needs to be, especially given that they so often don't have the magic answers. What do you think about that? And the guaranteed annual income too.
One other segment, and that is you got to do something about the lawsuits.
I think that's right.
I think they are out of control.
Yep.
And you've got to restrict the payments because doctors' insurance is so astronomical.
It is.
That's part of the reason that the prices for health services have gone up.
All of those things. That's a little bit tangential, so let's go back. And the guaranteed income, yes, I think even the left and right agree that it's some basic for humanity reasons and maybe even to prevent violence, we need to provide a basic annual income for folks. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What is your perspective on the question of whether government should restrict the amount of gigs as opposed to full-time jobs? Hi, it's you. Let's go to next. Yeah, it's you.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, sorry. I wanted to say the first caller's comment was very odd to me. I want to say that I found your format not the least bit confusing, and all the points were valid, and it was great.
Thank you. We need it. We need that. Believe it or not, after all these years, we still really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, I couldn't understand. It was perfect. In the 80s, I actually began temping in between jobs and ended up making it kind of a life for almost 8 years, and it was very challenging. I liked the change, but I also noticed that the speed and the pressure of having 7 temporary employment agencies that are keeping you strung along actually threatened my sense of self.
Sure.
In other words, I noticed kind of a, you know, constant sycophanticness coming in as I was continually adjusting to these different employment cultures, as your wife put it.
Let's just explain the word. Sycophant is kind of a fancy word, so it means sucking up in plain English.
Exactly.
You're always sucking
and
up to everybody.
On a regular basis, it's hard to keep your center, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, particularly in the cases where you're maybe doing a gig for 3 weeks and then a different one for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And but I wanted to add, too, I don't know, maybe this is another program, but given what was discussed, all this discussion of this during the, you know, the campaigning and the election, my answer, by the way, in terms of the two sides, is with the immediate one was, since it seems equal number of valid points on both sides, where's the middle road? And my question is, and I think other people in this country are wondering, is there a middle road, and is there something that government can do, and where does trade laws come in as far as creating a middle of the road so as to slow down what may be an inevitable here? And as I say, that may need be another program, but
I love
to hear your answers to that.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to capstone this. So why don't we, before we even go to the next call, you can call us, stay on the line. It was a great, great question. Barbara, so if you were President Clinton, is there a middle road or not middle road? What would you, forget about taking sides, what, if anything, would you do regarding the trend to ever more jobs converted from part-time, from full-time with benefits to part-time or contract or temp or gigs? Which, what would be your position as President Clinton?
I would try to create some tax incentives for companies that provided full-time benefited jobs for workers and kept the manufacturing or the jobs in the United States.
I wouldn't do that. I think, you know, that, again, that's making the taxpayer pay for something that doesn't need to be paid for. In my judgment, what I would do is I would encourage, simply encourage, and encourage, and this was an old, and again, I'm sounding more like an old lefty, but I'm really not, but there was something called the triple bottom line, people, planet, and profits. And I would encourage employers to really think as they choose, as they make their decisions as to whether a position needs to be full-time or with benefits or part-time, to consider everything, to consider the people, that is the coworkers. What is the effect of having a part-time or temps, lots of part-time or temps in your workforce? What is the effect on customers? What is the effect on the planet? What is the overall happiness? And yes, and then make your decision. And sometimes you're going to decide that, yes, this position should be part-time temp. Other times, employers. So as a government, I would use a bully pulpit rather than yet more taxation and, in quote, incentives, because we see then those become pretty perverse. And then they hire all these, you know, these full-time benefited people on the backs of, with these tax benefits, where all the taxpayer, which frankly really is already hit up quite a bit, ending up paying more taxes. What do you think, Barb, before we go back to phones?
No, I think you make a good point, but I think you have to give companies an incentive to do this, because clearly, given the choice, you've got an awful lot of them going offshore to pay little.
There's two ways to encourage. One is with dollars, which is end up being more like it's less. I feel I have a better chance of making society wiser and leaders wiser by educating about educating to look in full dimension at the impacts of hiring full-time benefited. Where they might just say, here's $5, you know, if you go and hire this person full-time and benefited. It feels like we're going to ultimately do more good and keep government from being a policeman and more of an encourager of wise thinking if we go that route. Does that make sense?
Okay, that makes sense.
All right, let's go back to the phones.
I don't agree with it, but it makes sense.
That's fine. Okay, back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What is your thoughts about this issue of whether government should restrict the number of part-time and temp gigs? Hi, it's you. Are you there? Let's go to the next line. Welcome to the show. What's your perspective?
Well, you know, as a private employer, there's a common denominator here that could be used, and one is the government could train people by sector and help network with small business. In other words, if you were in optical, the government would have a module to help the private small business select from a group of people who have been helped with the skills and the training to work part-time. And you would create a network of people by sector who would be more effective and as effective, or not as effective, but as more effective as those that you hired full-time. Because, you know, if you hire part-time people, they don't stand a chance. And you don't stand a chance as a small business owner to train them. You're spending money to train them, to bring them up to date, to keep them up to date. The government could do it most economically by doing it by sector, and these people by sector could tap into this training and then be kept up to date and compete with people who want full-time, and the employers would benefit from people who had the proper training, who could be kept up to date, and then the economy would be better off.
Why would you need, I mean, right now we have an unlimited number of certifications that are offered by the private sector, certificates for everybody, offered by everybody from professional associations to Microsoft. We've got free courses that are available on Coursera, edX, Udemy, etc. you know, if the government is starting in all these sectors providing its own, first of all, it's going to have the governmental biases, and second of all, it's a massive increase in the size of government. Why do we need more than the massive amounts of those kind of trainings already that already exist?
No, I concur.
Okay. Thanks a lot for the call. It's so rare. You know what? I need to say this, Barb. You know, so rarely in this economy, we're all so stuck on insisting we're right. How rare did people say, "You're right, I concur." What a society.
That was very, very nice. I need to take a lesson from that.
I think we all do. It's not a fight. That's why we do the switch sides in the middle debate. So it's not a matter of winning. It's a matter of justice accruing. And we're trying to model broad thinking here, and certainly we want to admit when we're wrong. I love when I say to you, Barbara, good point, or I say to a caller, good point. I mean, we need to not be stuck on winning the argument, but letting our goal be justice, not winning. Is that fair?
That's not only fair, it's a really good point.
And that's the problem with our system. Thank you. And that's the problem with our system of jurisprudence. When your system of jurisprudence has got two very smart people, lawyers, arguing not for which is just, but arguing for their side. You know, you've got most of the energy, most of the brain power, not searching for truth. In my judgment, we would replace our advocacy system, which has its advantage. I understand if you're fighting for a side, you're more motivated. But I'd rather see three judges where they divide the work up in investigating a case and have each one, as they do in part some of the cases in Europe, some of the courts in Europe, where they each take, they just investigate one-third of the case, and then, but their goal is to come to justice, not to win. Anyway, we have time for one more quick call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. You get the last word. What is your thoughts about this discussion we're having about whether we should restrict government, restrict temp jobs, or whether government should restrict the number of part-time or temp jobs?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear?
Yes, hi. I believe that the law should be fair, that these big companies with venture capitalists, lawyers, and lobbyists can afford, they don't have to worry about misclassifying an employee as an independent contractor, but smaller businesses, local businesses that are competing in that same space can't take that risk. If you get caught or you misclassify an employee as an independent contractor, the fines can often put you out of business.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem fair to me that small businesses, local businesses have to adhere to these pretty onerous labor laws.
I know.
And the TaskRabbit, Uber, DocuPay, they go on and on, and it's just unfair, and it puts the wages up, which is, I'm fine with, I just think it needs to be fair. If they can do it, then we can, I'm happy to pay my fair share, but if they can do it, we should be able to do it. Or, if we have to do it, they should have to do it. It's not
okay, we're out of time, so I'm going to have to say thank you. Indeed, the burdens there are huge burdens on certainly on small businesses that after more than 25 employees, they've got to adhere to basically the same thing as a 10,000 person company. Barb, we have 30. I want to give you the last word. You got about 15 seconds. What are you, or 30 seconds, whatever. Say something to capstone this whole thing.
Wow. Unfortunately, I think the gig economy exacerbates winners and losers, and I think when you have regular benefited jobs, it helps to even out some of the differences, and I think for society as a whole, it's a net good for people to have stable employment and not have to worry about the basics of life.
And it's certainly good to have Barbara Nemko stably. We've been together 43 years. We'll have 40 official years of marriage on December 26th. Thank you for adding stability to my life.
Thank you, and same to you.
Good. And that is Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Debbie Kennedy, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do Work Orders on Callers and the Field Polls Mark DiCamillo on what it's really like to be a pollster, and I will not be able to resist asking for his predictions on the California propositions, which is his specialty. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko for Barbara Nemko, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us. Growth among those who don't.
For the archives of Dr. Marty Nemko's articles, information on his 8 books, including his new book, The Best of Marty Nemko, plus how you can consult privately with Marty, go to martynemko.com. That's MartyNemko. WKO.com. And you can join Marty again next Sunday morning at 11 for Work with Marty Nemco here on 91.7 KLW San Francisco.